On this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio, we have our 86th Texas Legislature Spectacular. The session has started, and I bring in Carrie Cheshire and Brandon Waltons to break down the issues that are taking center stage in the legislature. I have a new speaker. We'll talk about the issues he's uniting with the governor and lieutenant governor on. But we'll also talk about how we'll need to see courage out of legislators if we're going to see real results. Welcome back, friends, to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, at Tweet Tony Mac. If you want to follow me on Twitter, coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas. I wanted to have a little special program this week, our 86th Texas Legislature Spectacular. Brought in Carrie Cheshire, Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, and Brandon Waltons, Capital Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. I wanted to spend some time this program talking about the legislative session that's now upon us. Legislators arriving in Austin this week, starting off the 86th Texas legislative session. It's an interesting day. New speaker. We can no longer have to say a presumptive speaker, Dennis Bonham. We now have a new speaker of the House. That's kind of the big story of the week. A lot of changes in store.
Yeah, new speaker of the House. It's first time in about a decade that we have a new speaker of the House leading the Texas House and the legislature, you know. And so for the next, 130 or so days now, you know, it's hold on to your wallets, watch out for your liberty, you know. Well, the legislature is in Austin.
That's the old saying. When the legislature's in town, your liberty and your property are not safe. So it's a danger zone. We were listening to Danger Zone earlier. It's a danger zone until the end of May.
Yeah, but for Texans who are watching this, I mean, when you watched on day one, when the legislature gaveled in and they elected a new speaker and Bonin gave his address, it really does feel different. Right? Not better or worse, but it feels different because for the first time in a decade, you don't have now former Speaker Strauss at the helm.
Yeah, I'm going to interrupt you there, Brandon, because it absolutely did feel better. You know, 4 years ago, we had Dan Patrick come in over David Dewhurst, who had killed conservative reform in the Texas Senate. He boldly said it's a new day in Texas. And we largely saw that with Dennis Bonin taking the helm of the Texas House. His election is a grassroots victory in and of itself because it removes Joe Strauss. And also, he was elected within the Republican caucus. Of course, we talked about this on Texas Scorecard Radio. We talked about this at TexasScorecard.com. All the way through last fall, there was an open race for the next Speaker of the House. Who was going to succeed Joe Strauss? Was it going to be somebody who was elected with the support of a majority of Republicans, or was it going to be another coalition speaker who brokered a deal between liberal Republicans and Democrats to gain control
of
the gavel?
You know, what we've seen over the last decade in the Texas House of Representatives is a boxing out of conservatives. Conservatives are put on the sideline, are the most conservative members. Well, what I mean by that, and the liberal Republicans, the Democrats, are given a prime position. And what we saw on Tuesday with the election of Speaker Bonin, unanimously elected, so everybody's kind of rallying around this guy who's at this point all things to all people, right? Mm-hmm. You know, he hasn't had to make a lot of tough, harsh decisions that would upset somebody. But what you're seeing is a lot of rhetoric about equal access to the process, equal access to the floor, and equal opportunity for everybody involved to affect the legislative process.
And when Bonin was running his candidacy, and it was, of course, a very quick candidacy, I mean, just in a matter of weeks, he had amassed enough support, put out his list of 109 members who had signed on to support him, says the speaker's race is over back in November, then, of course, nominated by the Republican caucus and then elected unanimously when the legislature gaveled in. Talking to members, when they were making that decision, a lot of them said, you know, he may not be the most conservative member of the legislature, but he's promised me, or he's told me and told other members that he's going to go back and he's going to allow the House to govern itself. And this is actually something that Speaker Bonin has said in appearances across the state before the legislature met. He actually went to districts. He went into Tyler where Representative Cole Hefner, Matt Schaefer, and some of those members.
Some of the conservative members from East Texas.
Yeah, and he's telling the body, look, you know, the legislature has, you know, a number of priorities. Every member has their priorities, the big ones being school finance reform and property tax relief.
Those things. And we'll touch on those in detail here.
Right, but he's saying, I don't need to have a plan. I want to let the House be able to work itself and return to the rules. And this would be a very, very big departure from the way things have been running in the Texas House under former Speaker Strauss.
Well, actually doing it would be a big departure, but we have to be honest with ourselves, saying that we're going to have a member-driven House and people are going to be able to vote their districts. That's something that we've heard from the Texas House since it was originally conceived.
Yeah.
It just hasn't been followed that way under Speaker Strauss.
And Carrie, you've really, truly, you've stole the words out of my mouth. I was about to say, this is great rhetoric, but you know, if for those of us who are around in 2009, whenever Joe Strauss is elected Speaker, he came in saying, hey, this is going to be a member-driven House. This is going to be a body where everybody's going to push it, and I'm not going to push an agenda through on people. And it was a change. You went from a kind of a dictatorial system under Speaker Craddock back in the mid-2000s to this oligarchy of power, mm-hmm. you know, a shared power amongst an elite few under Strauss, really would be the better way to describe it. Does this rhetoric, you know, mean anything? I think that's a really open question.
It is an open question for the next 130 or so days, which, of course, is how long the legislature has to meet to consider the legislative goals of Texans. But we did see some positive signs in the first couple days of the Bonin regime, if we can call it that. But, you know, the jury is still out. The jury will still be out on Bonin all the way through, sine die, when the legislature adjourns with their business done. We'll see what passed, what didn't pass. Do they have to come back for a special session? Were members' rights to speak out, to represent their districts, to offer bills, to offer amendments, were those respected, or did we see more of the same?
Yeah, Brandon, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the relationship between now Speaker Bonin mm-hmm. and the other two members of, you know, what's sometimes called the Big Three, Governor Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Patrick. You know, in the last session, we saw Speaker Strauss call the governor's agenda horse manure. We found out that Speaker Strauss, like, basically wouldn't talk to Lieutenant Governor Patrick. They very rarely would even meet, and at those meetings, it was not substantive.
Right.
And that was actually, we knew that there was an element of that, but then over time, you started finding out how deep that problem was. We've seen some meetings now between the Big Three, and it seems positive.
Well, you've seen some meetings. I mean, shortly after Speaker Bonin now announced that he had those signatures, that he had the support, before he was even elected Speaker of the House, you had meetings, phone calls with him, Governor Abbott, and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, almost even more noteworthy, you've had for, you know, the past several sessions, especially since Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick has been leading the Senate. You've had an absolute breakdown in communication between the two bodies and between the two leaders of those chambers. So the day after Bonin was sworn in, elected Speaker, he actually held a meeting and held a press conference with both Governor Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick out on the lawn of the governor's mansion. They had just had breakfast and say they're going to make this a weekly thing. And they're actually going to stick to it, unlike sessions past. Where we found out from Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick's actually said that, you know, so that Speaker Strauss would not call him, would not go to dinner with him, right?
Yeah.
And now he's looking forward to someone he can actually talk to. The three of them met, and they had a press conference, and they actually talked about shared goals going into the session. It's something we haven't seen. Talking about, again, the school finance and property tax reform.
Yeah, and I want to touch on that here in a moment and talk about, you know, there is a degree that you're seeing these leaders and everyone singing from the same song sheet, but whenever I say that, I kind of mean they've picked out the same song that they want to sing, but you're not sure if it's the, you know, if it's which cover version they're going to pick, right? So I think we'll get to whether there's meat on the bone on that. But Carrie, I wanted to touch on Speaker Bonin's appearance at Texas Public Policy Foundation's policy orientation. I mean, this is something, you know, okay, we're talking about a guy who shows up at a breakfast. Does it matter? Yes, in the context of what we've seen out of the Speaker's office over the last decade, this is actually pretty significant.
Yeah, absolutely, Tony. You know, part of it's that songbook you mentioned. Part of it's an era of good feelings. But a lot of it is, you know, we're seeing continued signs that the hostile war against the Texas Senate and the governor on the part of the House is over.
Yeah.
And that Dennis Bonin is going to be a Republican speaker who does Republican things.
Yeah.
You know, in previous sessions, you'd have, you know, Greg Abbott come out with his press release, we need to ban sanctuary cities. 2 hours later, you'd hear Dan Patrick say, yeah, me too. And then 2 hours later, there'd be this big deafening silence where Joe Strauss was supposed to say, you know, the House will make banning sanctuary cities a priority. He wouldn't say anything. And then 2 hours after that, you'd have Ken Paxton say, oh, yeah, add me to that list. That's pretty cool.
Sure.
And
yeah,
now,
so it's pretty much everybody is on the same page, but...
But Joe Strauss.
But, Joe Strauss,
but
right.
now Dennis Bonin is you know, kind of being a team player for the purposes of discussion. you know, Texas Public Policy Foundation, conservative think tank down in Austin, really Joe Strauss has kind of named them as public enemies when he was the Texas House Speaker.
Sure.
Dennis Bonin going and speaking as a keynote at their breakfast and their policy orientation. Pretty big deal.
Yeah, and saying there, look, you know, I like the fact that you guys hold elected officials accountable and you promote conservative ideas, you know, saying, look, it's one of the problems in Austin is that whenever you're an elected official, everybody wants to suck up. So you have a bad idea. People say, oh, well, that bad idea, that's the best idea ever. You know, everybody wants to suck up. And here you have a body that says, no, that bad idea is a bad idea. Right?
Yeah.
And here's why. And actually expressing some appreciation for that kind of disagreement, which is, you know, refreshing.
That's right. You know, look, we're going to continue to see areas where Republicans, where conservatives, where Republicans and Democrats, where conservatives and conservatives continue to agree to disagree on some issues and stuff. But it looks like the area of open hostility, of open toxicity that was
just
exhibited
antagonism,
by Joe Strauss,
yeah.
You know, literally calling the governor's agenda horse manure, you know, attacking the Texas Public Policy Foundation, attacking organizations like Texas Right to Life openly and defiantly. It appears that that era is over.
Well,
it's a very positive sign.
And to that point, I mean, you had Governor Greg Abbott the night before session started at an event, at a dinner, and saying that it'll be good to have a Republican Speaker of the House again.
Right. And just acknowledging, I mean, people call Strauss a rhino Republican in name only. And, you know, everybody's kind of agreeing. Look, that's an accurate label. This guy was not really a Republican Speaker. Let's talk about these issues. We've touched on it a few times. It came up in the speeches. It came up in the press conference. Talked about over at the TPPF breakfast. Property tax reform, and then a lot of people saying, "Oh, a school finance reform." These things are linked. My concern is reform. To me, you think reform means change, and you kind of say change to what? What kind of change? And so my concern is, it's real easy for everyone to say, "Well, I want property tax reform. I want school finance reform." They may have completely different visions of what direction that reform goes in, what the goals and ends of that reform would be. Are we not seeing enough substance out of really anyone at this point on these issues?
Well, we've seen some specificity. I mean, you had about a year ago, almost to the day, you had Governor Greg Abbott releasing his plan for property tax reform, which includes, you know, lowering the rollback rate and things like that. You had Lieutenant...
Yeah, and let's end for people.
Sure.
People maybe not know. So there's an existing provision in state law right now that says you can't go over a certain percentage. If you do, you can petition to roll back that local property tax increase. And what the governor has said is, hey, local governments, you can't go over 2.5%.
Yeah.
You can't do more than a 2.5% property tax increase. And that's not rate change. That's actual effective how much money you're taking from folks. And if you do, it automatically triggers an election. And so it's about having taxpayers have more say and a significant amount of more say in what their local property tax.
Right. And so you've got a package of specific reforms from Governor Abbott that he's been out there leading on. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who, of course, has passed measures, to die in the House under Strauss in previous sessions, has passed out property tax reform measures out of his body, has said... recently at the start of this session has said that he agrees with Governor Abbott's plan and you know, wants to see that work. The person we haven't heard the specifics from is Speaker Bonin at this point, who is kind of askew that has said, you know, I don't want to talk specifics. I want to let the members decide all this, but he has acknowledged the problem. I mean, even in his opening address to the House shortly after being elected, he said, you know, property tax reform has to be a priority because Texans are being taxed out of their homes.
Right.
Well, and look, we talk,
which gets to the relief element.
Right.
You know, I think we talk about reform, and that means change.
Right.
Okay, so that's vague. But whenever you say relief, that to me it means somebody somewhere is paying a lower property tax bill, which is at least a direction to head in.
Right. And look, as we're talking about Dennis Bonin and property tax relief, property tax reform, school finance reform, those sort of things, we've all talked here at Texas Scorecard about the importance of the speaker not to really put their thumb too hard on the scales to let the House govern itself and everything else. And all of that's true. But we will see very quickly when he comes out with his committee assignments in terms of who he picks, kind of a hint at what he thinks property tax reform ought to be, what he thinks school finance reform ought to be. It's important to note that last session, Dennis Bonin and was trying to carry the property tax reform bill for the governor and the lieutenant governor and State Senator Paul Bettencourt, who's kind of been the big tax wonk and expert on that issue, couldn't get the votes necessary to carry a real bill out, even out of his committee, given how it was stacked by Joe Strauss, the speaker. So I think we'll see very quickly, you know, who does he appoint as the chair of Ways and Means? Who does he appoint as the chair of Public Education? What do those committees look like? Are they favorable to, you know, kind of a more conservative approach to property tax reform, or, you know, are we looking down the barrel of a spending spree?
Because that's
something that we haven't talked about yet, which is how much more money legislators have to spend now that they're in Austin.
Yeah. So when you look at how Bonin has done this, from an appropriate perspective, he said, look, I don't have an agenda. The agenda is the House's agenda. And that's good. I mean, that's good rhetoric. And it has meaning. It has some meaning in terms of the posture of not saying, well, here's what my agenda is as the presiding officer, and everybody just needs to get on board. That is good. But you're also kind of still left in the open of what direction does reform even mean? Obviously, I think there are a lot of Democrats out there who would say, oh, I'm for property tax reform. Our local governments need more flexibility to raise taxes, to increase local taxes and local spending.
And you saw Democrats in November campaigning on property tax reform.
And saying, look, we either explicitly saying or implicitly saying, look, we need an income tax in the state. That's the way we're going to deal with this high property tax burden. We can cut your property taxes if we just put in place an income tax. Well, that's a no-go. You know, that's a non-starter for a Republican state, and I think for you know, the vast majority of Texans, Republicans and Democrats alike. And so you do have a lack of specificity there. I think what's interesting looking at history, you're talking about Bonin's participation with Ways and Means and the bills he's carried in the past. You've seen him in sessions even before that have a deep reluctance to embrace any kind concept where we would just throw money at local governments with very little accountability and then expect that the local property taxes are going to go down. And I think that's really wise and has been a wise criticism of proposals in the past, like you know, the 2006 business margins tax increase, where you say, oh, well, we're suddenly going to decrease local property taxes by increasing this business tax over here. And it you know, just didn't work, and I think it was fairly predictable that that kind of thing wouldn't work.
Yeah, I think that's perhaps Dennis Bonin's best quality is his skepticism for local governments. We saw that last session on the property tax bill. We've seen that on issues like the fracking ban and other issues where, you know, they come in and say, well, look, if we just got more money from the state, obviously we'd reduce the rates. And I think he's right to levy the criticism. It's like, no, you wouldn't. You never have before. No. You never will. You know, I think that'll be a very interesting narrative to watch. But I want to circle back to legislators having so much more money this session. You know, Brandon, I think you wrote the article at Texas Scorecard about the biannual revenue estimate from the comptroller coming back saying that basically legislators have a lot more money to appropriate here, even with, you know,
Texas
perhaps
is
the
growing, right? Texas
with the
is
oil
growing.
And gas sector.
Yeah.
And,
about,
you know,
8%, about an 8% growth from the last
8%
plan.
Growth and about double the balance in the Economic Stabilization Fund as is needed to maintain the credit rating. So I think you're going to see a lot of instances institutional pressure to take that money and go spend it. Are they going to spend it wisely? Are they going to spend it on one-time expenditures? Are they going to spend it on infrastructure? Are they going to spend it on property tax relief? Yeah. You know, we've kind of defined the goal of, you know, are Republicans successful in delivering property tax relief if, you know, Joe taxpayer looks at their bill from 2018 and their bill from 2019 and the 2019 one is lower.
Yeah.
That's the only way that they've been
successful.
Probably
2020 would be when we actually, you know, the way the legislative process moves and the appropriations.
I think it's an emergency, Tony. Yeah. I think they can rock and roll.
Fair. You know, I wanted to tell you, we were talking about the property tax issue and, you know, the vagueness of saying, well, we're for reform. Okay. What does that mean? That means change. Okay. School finance reform. This is the other thing that everybody mentioned. Oh, we're for school finance reform. Again, reform means change. What change to what, you know, in that, and I think you're not hearing, okay, we want X amount of dollars per student. You almost never hear that answer from administrators. How much money do you need? Well, more, right? More is always the answer. So you never really hear an answer there. I think there's some interest in balance, you know, there's funding formulas and all these things about how money gets distributed from the state to the school districts, you know. That means goring somebody's ox to move money from one district to another. You haven't heard any specificity there. What is going on with it? What does it mean other than, you know, what I think it means is reform means throw more money at it. I think that's what its proponents mean, although they don't say that explicitly.
Sure. Well, you had a commission on public school finance that was assembled during the interim after the last legislative session, actually put out their findings towards the end of December. But even amongst the members of those committee, which included public members, Senate members, House members, a lot of different folks, the big theme you heard was like you said, is the state. A lot of people saying the state needs to put more money towards education, and there's some disagreement on that, but there's not a lot inside the legislature. Where the disagreement comes in is, okay, so if the state comes in and the state funds, puts more money into public education across the state, well then what happens to those districts that are already levying these huge property taxes? You know, how are we going to compensate for that? Are people just going to be taxed even more? Are we going to put more money in, but their property taxes don't change? Actually, talking to now Speaker Dennis Bonin before, I asked him, well, when you talk about school finance, do you see that being tied to property tax relief, using the word relief? He actually said, yes, he sees the issues as totally intertwined.
Well, I mean, you do see ridiculous situations like, you know, here in the People's Republic of Austin, Austin ISD, about 40% of its tax collections are taken and spent by the state in other districts through the Robin Hood plan.
Sure.
You've got, I think, Tony, you've talked about almost $2 billion in state funding that's coming from local property taxpayers in, quote, rich school districts that don't always include rich people, you know, areas like Austin ISD, Dallas ISD, Houston ISD, all being donor districts to the program. And that being a major, major problem, you've got these people all over the state who are crying out for major relief. I mean, literally, their school tax bills are 40% higher than they need to be.
And to your point, so if we got rid of the Robin Hood, the redistribution, we'll use the city of Austin for an example, or Austin ISD rather, you know, if we got rid of that and the school district in Austin was able to keep more of that money, taxpayers should expect that their property tax bills are going to go down because they're no longer sending that 40%.
But you never expect a tax bill to go down. So you have to have specificity and an action plan if you expect to get anything resembling actual relief and tax bills going down. I think that brings us to this issue. What we're not really seeing out of legislators right now is enough specificity. To say, yeah, I'm for school finance reform. Reform means that people are paying less on their property tax bills, right? And, you know, next year because they're hurting and being taxed out of their homes. Reform means this specific goal and specific end. And my concern, and I wanted to touch, you know, we wanted to segue to this, get to the issue of the rules debate on day two in the House. You see a kind of a fearfulness of legislators to put themselves out there and stake out a concrete position. And this is actually true, I think, not just, you know, of Republicans and conservative Republicans. I think I'm seeing it a bit from the Democrats. Everyone having a little bit of a gun-shy attitude about staking out a position and saying, this is exactly what I'm for. This is what my constituents want me to achieve. Let's get it done.
Well, that's right, Tony. You know, there's a new sheriff in town in the Texas House. And, you know, kind of like when your parents hired a new babysitter, you didn't exactly know how strict they were going to be. You didn't, you know, do we have to do it this way? Do we have to do that? I think you still got a lot of footsie being played by a lot of folks on both sides of the aisle.
That awkward point when you start a new job, right?
Yeah.
You're not kind of...
You don't really know how far you can push it.
Yeah.
What can I say? What can I do? Am I going to offend somebody? It's a little bit of that feel to the start of the session.
Yeah, and so kind of not with a bang, but with a whimper. So began the rules debate in the Texas House, just, you know, very quickly. You know, very frustratingly, you saw conservatives have a great opportunity. You know, Bonin is saying that I'm going to have a member-driven House. I'm going to allow members to vote their districts. I'm not going to put my thumb on the scales. You had one lawmaker who tested his mettle on that. That was
sure.
freshman state representative.
Yeah, a freshman.
Middleton,
you know,
of Wallaceville, a very conservative and, you know, very rising star, I believe, in the movement, coming out and offering a deal that he said was important to him and his constituents, term limits for the office of speaker and committee chairs, laying it out. Very impressed to see, you know, him go and lay it out on literally his second day in the Texas House, and then also impressed to see Speaker Dennis Bonin step away from the dais and allow the issue to be debated and have a record vote.
Well, so the funny thing is, you've had this as an issue that was in the speaker's race, as debated was about term limits. It's something that, you know, voters are familiar. Term limits, it's a concept. Everybody gets the concept. This freshman member comes in and offers it. The speaker does the right thing. He steps away from the dais. He says, you know, this is something that would potentially affect him, so he steps away, and that was appropriate. And then, you know, it fizzles out. Nobody wants to vote for it. Why? I think because they're afraid that they're going to step on somebody's toes.
Well, I think that's it. But, you know, kind of moving beyond that, the rules debate offered a lot of opportunities for conservatives to really enhance their ability to represent their districts, enhance citizen access to the Capitol, and they largely whiffed on them. You did see State Representative Jonathan Stickland of Bedford offer an amendment that would say basically citizens can go testify at their district office, you know, register their opinion on legislation.
Yeah, right now you have folks having to drive, you know, if you're in Texarkana, you're talking, what, 7-8, however many hours to get to Austin.
Or if you're in El Paso, if you're in Amarillo.
It's a long drive to come to Austin to fill out an iPad. And here we said, hey, let's open this process up so that it's not just the lobbyists in Austin who get to participate in the process. Should be a no-brainer.
No-brainer, and the SREC said, hey, that's a great idea. We support it. The Texas GOP tweeted about it, said, hey, way to go, Jonathan Stickland, good job. Frustratingly, it got destroyed on the floor of the House.
Votes.
And even more frustratingly, you saw some lawmakers who voted for basically the same thing in 2017 vote against it in 2019.
Yeah.
Very frustrating. I mean, State Representative Brooks Landgraf from out in Odessa thought it was a good idea in 2017 to let people in Odessa just go to his office and register their opinion on a bill. Not in 2019.
So,
for some reason.
The takeaway, I think, Brandon, is if we see more of this, we're not going to see these priorities make it over the finish line by the end of the session, because it requires that clarity and that aggressiveness to say, here's what we're trying to achieve, here's what we're going to do.
Well, exactly. It's a new day in the Texas House. You know, if you take Speaker Bonin and everything he said, you know, members are going to be able to represent their districts, but that means they actually have to go do that.
He's saying they can. So the field
is open, but it's up to members to actually go and orchestrate those fights and push for the things they campaigned on.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me. I wanted to talk about these issues. It's a whole session that we're going to be keeping an eye on these things. So there will be more benchmarks. I think, Kerry, you mentioned earlier the next step will be the committee assignments. So we'll get a very good picture at what kind of leadership Speaker Bonin wants to put in place. That'll be coming in the coming weeks. But thank you guys for this. And I think folks will want to stay tuned.
Thanks, Tony.
As I was saying to Carrie and Brandon, taxpayers have a lot of work in front of them this legislative session if they want to ensure they get real results come the end of May. And for that, you've got to stay informed. Obviously, encourage folks to subscribe to this program. Also, check out EmpowerTexans.com, TexasScorecard.com. Great resources there. But a new resource, Sunday Scorecard on the Empower Texans Facebook page, a Facebook Live show, video show, talking about the things going on in the session. So encourage folks to check those out, stay involved, and come back next week for more information from us. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at EmpowerTexans.com.